Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Technology Espresso Cafe Radio. Dave and Jacqueline bring you up close and personal to the innovators, contributors, and creative minds in and around technology today. Visit our website portal at www.technologyespresso.com. There, you will find a full list of our broadcasts from all across the technology spectrum, our social media handles, and related content. So sit back with Dave and Jacqueline as they serve up Technology Espresso fast, hot, and intense.
And hello, good afternoon, good evening, maybe even good morning somewhere. This is Jacqueline Sanders with Technology Espresso Cafe Radio. And hello, welcome to another edition of Ask the Analyst with none other than Coop from B2T Training. Hello, Coop.
What's up? Good afternoon. Ready to go.
I know, exactly. That 2 weeks flew by, but, you know, the whole time I was thinking about where our conversation ended and where we are going next, because it's really starting to heat up. I mean, we're really kind of getting our momentum here around, you know, I feel like we're peeling back the layers. We're being analysts, and we're analyzing this whole space, you know. And interesting enough, I want our listeners to know that this is our eighth episode, so we have our archive 1 through 7 that you can go back and visit. And remembering, when you're listening, you're also earning PDUs and CDUs. So if you have questions about how to claim your PDUs and CDUs, you can email us at technologyespresso@gmail.com, and we'll make sure and get you that information. But not only are you listening and earning points, but we're really dealing with the questions that come to us, even from the students and from people that we talk to, about how to really crack the, you know, some of the things that we see over and over in projects. And that's one of the things that we kind of ended in the last episode, is as we were answering the questions, and some of the frequently asked questions were, how do I know when I'm done? How much documentation do I need to do? And then at the very end, funny enough, we said, are we even asking the right questions? And, you know, that's common to analysts. But if you remember that comment at the end, I know that really was, to me, the start of a whole nother vein of questions around, we can talk about what the business analyst should be doing and how they should be approaching it, but a lot of it we respond with, it depends. So let me throw it to you, Coop, and see, you know, where was your mind when we ended and left on that note of saying, are we even asking the right questions?
Yeah, I think it was around, we the same conversation has come up. You know, I've been in the space over 18 years, and Jacqueline, I know you've been in it as long, and the similar things pop up all the time. So what is it that we're trying to get after? And maybe, you know, you and I had the conversation a few days later or so around, well, is it even just the analyst and what the analyst has to do, or is it the makeup of the whole team? And, you know, and what teams are trying to attack, and what works for a team. Team A might not be what works for team B. And maybe it's the culture of the organization. I think in the end, that's what it comes down to. It's the culture of an organization, not just following processes or thinking about what documentation I have to do or how much is. We want successful projects, so how do we go about doing that?
Absolutely right. Absolutely right. And that's where that really is so important. And that's why these conversations aren't just about or two or involving business analysts. We've got to broaden who is having this conversation, because everybody at the end of the project, they seem to know that requirements is why the project wasn't successful or as successful, or why something was missed or the client isn't happy. They know that at the end of the project, but join us in having the conversation at the beginning to make sure that we are, as a team, thinking about what do we need to do so that we're not having that conversation on the back end about what is missed. So that is that's kind of the foundation for some of our conversations. And like I said, I really feel like we're now peeling back the onion. There's definitely a lot of advice we can give people, and still welcome any questions. There are no, you know, we're always open to the questions that are on your mind that you're dealing with at the moment. So it might be about the documentation or how much or how little. But today we're also going to, you're going to find that this level of question is about, you know, looking at beyond just the business analyst. And so let me go to our first question, and then as we respond to this, we'll hit those different areas. But those on the phone that are listening, if this is your first time, welcome. But I want you to know all you have to do is press 1. If you'd like to ask a question or even, you know, take us in a different direction of what's on your mind at the moment around anything that deals with project success, really. And then also those who are listening on their laptop, we welcome you as well. And join Jovan, who is our sound engineer and also our specialist when it comes to, and my intern who does our voiceovers. And today also she's going to be tweeting. So look for the hashtag AskAnAnalyst, and you will see the questions pop up, and she'll also be pulling some of the sound bites from the show as we speak. And as well as you can type her if you have a question right there in Twitter. So we're hitting all cylinders today. So let me go to our first question. And so, Coop, what advice do you have for people on what we call impossible projects? And where the business analyst feels like they're the one that's always being blamed. And it's not just a matter of, because I know sometimes we say, well, if you're in a, you know, a bad situation, just leave. Just go and find another opportunity. Mm-hmm. But not everyone is situated in the middle of Atlanta where there's, you know, an opportunity, you know, at your fingertips. Yeah. So sometimes you're in an organization and, you know, the BA feels backed against the wall. What can we say to them?
Well, you know, that's a pretty broad thing, like impossible projects. There's a lot of things that could seem real difficult. You know, so first I'll say, like, everything is possible, but there's factors that cause projects to feel impossible or feel burdensome or feel tiring. It's like, are we going through this again? So I think and you're right. I mean, yeah, the first thing is, do you have an opportunity to move? And if it's not leave the project, you know, leave the company, could it be somewhere else? Like, if it's gotten to a point, you don't want to be miserable doing this stuff, right? I mean, you work every day, so you have to find ways to make sure that you're feeling fulfilled and happy. And I think when it comes to impossible projects or challenging groups of stakeholders or challenging processes that you have to deal with based on what's happening in the organization, then I think it's, you know, back to the old saying of how do you eat an elephant, right? It's one bite at a time. So don't try to think or don't try to go after and say, okay, the next project, we're going to completely flip everything around and it's going to be so much better. Or, you know, I'm going to push hard to get, you know, for the next project to change our project process and do it differently so that we can improve. I think it's finding little things, right, one at a time and knocking them off the list. If it's, you know, stakeholder engagement, then try to find one stakeholder on the next project that you were struggling with on the last project. Now, how do you get them on board and how do you work better with them and how do you collaborate with them? If it's within the process, maybe, you know, a lot of organizations have PMOs or an organization that's responsible for the processes and the tools that you use. Maybe going to them and saying, hey, can we tweak or can I get you know, what's the word I'm looking for? It's like, can I get the ability to not do this piece for this project, and here is why, right? Just pick one thing, right, and slowly work out all the challenges and the things and the efficiencies or inefficiencies that are going on that you think you can work out. So it's hard for me to pick out one thing because there's so many different challenges that there can be. But you need to go after that one thing, and maybe every project, and it might take a year, it might take two, right? But every project, try to chip away at those things. So one, you'll start to feel some, you know, pride or enjoyment out of making the changes that you feel need to happen, and hopefully everybody else will be excited about them too.
No, absolutely, and that comes, like you said, that comes with some of the territory of change, you know, being in environments that are ever-changing and change management and being a change agent. It's interesting that business analysts, we're always walking into the business and, you know, whether it's through something they've requested or just a need in the business, we're changing their world. So at the same time, the same thing on the back end is that within IT, there are a lot of, you know, there's always a backlog of things that can be done differently or better, or they're still doing things the way they've always done it, and you having to break the cycle and get people on board and everything that you just said, Coop. So it's like we're doing it outward facing, and we're also doing it, you know, internally within IT. And you just have to still bear in mind, you know, people change, you know, it's uncomfortable, you know, so there's the people aspect of just, you know, bringing about change. And like you said, you just have to, you know, be patient both with your internal team as well with your customer base when you're trying to introduce new things or you see better ways of doing things. And a lot like the business, IT, they're so busy just trying to get whatever's on their plate today done that they don't have the time to think about, oh, okay, well, we could be doing it this way.
It's like change. Right, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. And, you know, the
Yeah, and
the
I think
other,
the other – oh, go ahead. Go ahead.
No, you.
Okay, so the other thing to remember, too, is that especially in large organizations and the folks online that – deal with this all the time. You know, reorgs happen and people leave and new people come in, and you can be headed down a path where you have like a director or a manager, whoever some of the key decision makers are to make change happen. You have them on board, and then all of a sudden there's a reorg and that director moves to a different department, and now you're a new director comes in and they have different ideas and different thoughts, and you might have to start over, right? And that's just a part of it, a part of the change. And you, by hopefully sticking to small items, you can get things underway quickly, right? The smaller something is, the easier it is for somebody to say, yeah, we could do that, right? Like if you go to a director and say, we need to change our entire project process, and here's what I have laid out. They're going to be like, whoa, you know, I can't consume that. There's no way we're doing that. There's too many moving parts and pieces and too many things in flight. But if you say, you know what, for this project, I want to tweak this and do it this way, they'll probably be like, yeah, go for it. Let me know how it went, right? And then you can show, hey, that tweak really helped. And based on our last project, we were able to do this a lot better. And then, you know, they might be more open to be like, oh, okay, yeah, let's talk to other teams and see if they want to do it. And then eventually things start to steamroll. But doing things in smaller chunks, I mean, that's not new. That's not a new concept. So I don't, you know, I'm not claiming to promote this as Coop's new idea or Jacqueline's new idea, but it's especially in this type of stuff, doing things in smaller chunks and trying to bring people along and being, as you said, Jacqueline, being patient.
Exactly. And, you know, the other piece that some people feel that only your company is dysfunctional.
Right.
I dare say.
It's
you know,
everywhere.
You know, I dare say that some people, even when you're, you know, you live somewhere like Atlanta and you have a lot of opportunities, you may find yourself jumping from job to job because you're trying to find this utopia, and that's kind mm-hmm. of you know, a complete misunderstanding. So you go, I'll let you speak to that and see what your thoughts are.
Yeah, you know, it's the same, you know, I compare that to everybody thinking that there's a perfect family out there, that my family's dysfunctional, there's, why are we so dysfunctional? When you look at this family, they look like they're so put together. Well, that's crap, right? I mean, it's not the case. There is no, you know, it's not like here's a functional family and everybody else is dysfunctional. Everybody operates the way they operate, and they have a culture for a number of reasons. Now, I'm not talking about, like, real unhealthy habits going on in families or in companies. I'm talking that there's just not that utopia, as you say, right? That there's this perfect organization and everybody's happy and blah, blah, blah. There's companies more leaning towards that than and others that aren't, but there is no one right company. You have to find, now, and this goes away from the question, like they couldn't leave, but you have to find organizations that believe in your culture and people around you, right? So you need to be a leader, and you can, right? You can change that culture. You have the ability. It doesn't matter where you are within the organization, right? You can begin to change that culture by acting the way you want to act and bring people along with you, right? And then people are going to want to be on your team, and the people that are going to want to be on your team are ones like you. So you can start to build this culture from the bottom up, or you don't have to change the culture of an organization. You can change the culture of your team, right? And then at least you'll be happier, and you'll enjoy coming into work and working, you know, being around the people you're with. So don't look for, back to the point, Jack, there is no, like, a functional company, and this is the best. Everybody has their glitches and differences and changes. It's no utopia out there.
Exactly. And I have to use a phrase of Tasha Hurley, who often joins us on our noonday show. She's on a spring break, so I hope she's enjoying her spring break, and will join us back when she comes back this way. But you know, one of the things she always says is, no matter what you're at the moment might feel like a frustration, keep asking, what could I learn from this? What can I get from this? And I think, and that's just kind of an attitude and a mindset toward that particular environment. I often used to say, you know, some of the things that I would experience, I was like, oh, these are going to be great war stories when I get in training class, because I, you know, I can share them with the students. So sometimes, you know, you're in a position where you're learning what not to do, so you can apply it later. But, you know, and it goes back to what I was saying, that, you know, some people think that their company is the only thing going through something. And in combination with what you said, is that I've, as a consultant, had to walk in organizations and really had no leverage to tell them what to do or not to do or how to do it. It was just, I was brought in on some of those assignments just to, you know, work a piece of a project. But at the same time, I had certain tools and techniques that I used that I didn't necessarily ask permission, but I did them in the background. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes people miss that point or that opportunity. You know, when I hear people say, well, they won't let me, and I'm thinking, do you have to have permission in, or can you actually, you know, through using it and having success, then be able to introduce, well, by the way, this is what I was using. If anyone else wants to use it, or if anyone else wants to. And I literally had people approach and say, well, how did you, you know that so fast? Or how did you put that, you know, you seem to have the answer when we were talking about priorities or something like that. And I could refer back to a tool or technique that I was using. And so I don't know if you had anything you wanted to add to that.
Yeah, you know, that I was just talking to one of our other instructors yesterday about that exact topic, that all the tools and techniques you use, you know, because we have people in class, oh, well, we don't do that at company X, or, you know, that's not part of our deliverable package, and it's not going to change, so we're not going to, you know, why bother learning that technique? And the reason to learn the technique is not for deliverable or that it has to be approved as a step that you do, right? If they're used to analyze the situation. So if it can help you analyze the situation, do it. Do it on your whiteboard, on your notepaper, on your PC. You don't have to show anybody. But then for whatever reason, you know, it will highlight, like I talked about the context diagram with her. If you're using the context diagram and your company doesn't use that as a communication mechanism or deliverable, that's fine. But you can throw it up on the whiteboard based on the information you have and start to see, wait, am I missing anything? Or, you know what, we didn't highlight this stakeholder group. What about that one? So, yeah, you never need permission to use any of the tools and techniques because there's analysis time that you have to do with you or your team that doesn't include everybody. Thing I wanted to talk about, I read an article yesterday, actually, about the choices rich people, it was like the choices millionaires make, right? And one of them was, it said, rich people choose to focus on opportunities. So this article was about how, you know, people that are rich in money, the choices that make and the things that they do. And one of the things they talked about was rich people choose to focus on opportunities. So they see potential for growth, where they said poor people see potential loss and rich people focus on the rewards, where poor people focus on the risks. And the poor people focus on the obstacles and rich people focus on the opportunity. So I think when it comes to impossible projects, don't focus on the obstacles that are in front of you. Look at it in a different lens. Look at it a different way to say, okay, what are the opportunities? What things can I do, right? What do I have the opportunity to do to make this better? Rather than saying, well, there's this obstacle around our project process. There's an obstacle around, you know, these real difficult stakeholders, and it's hard to deal with them, whatever that, you know, obstacle is. So rather than thinking about the obstacles, think about opportunities. And to your point, Jacqueline, that's what you're saying. Like, what are the opportunities for me to do this stuff and do it and focus that way rather than looking at everything of another obstacle, right? Because that gets tiring, and I've been there, right? I think it's hard, even though for the most part I'm an optimist and I try to live my life that way, thinking about, okay, what does this mean? Yes, it was a quote-unquote failure, but what does it mean? How can I learn? Similar to Tasha's, you know, attitude. But, you know, we're human too. So, I mean, for anybody to think I'm always like that, I'd be kidding myself. So there are times where, I get down. But then when you think about it, it just sucks the life out of you. And so I just choose to try to flip it around in that range. So it's good to know that I make a choice like millionaires. I'm not a millionaire, but I'm making choices. At least that one I'm doing.
They didn't talk about the big bankroll that they have in their bank account, you know. But
right,
other than
yes,
that,
I'm,
yes, you're just like yeah. all the other millionaires.
That's true. Right. I act just like them. I just don't have the bank accounts. Yeah.
Exactly. But you know, and something you said that is so true too, because even the kind of this question, and maybe it's my inflection, but, you know, I can see when people ask, you know, what advice do you have for people on an impossible project, you also have to think about, you've got to adjust your mindset just for your mental health and so that you don't get stressed out. Because if you focus on the impossible part, you know, then you're it gets built up inside of you. And like you said, you start dreading work, every aspect of work, because you've labeled it this impossible project. And there's been some projects that on the front end, I'm thinking to myself, I don't see it, but maybe someone else knows something, I don't know. And I remember one project that we went in with, if this is what I've been assigned, I'm going to do everything in my power to try to make it a successful implementation. And we tried every different angle that we possibly could. And we happened to be working with a COTS, a system, a third-party vendor, that And I know some of, and I know some of my students have even spoke to this, that they've been in a situation where there wasn't a formal evaluation or gap analysis like there should have been. It was more of someone just said, you know, I went golfing with a buddy and his nephew built the system and we're going to use it. So, you know, that was my mindset going into it, you know, okay, well, this is the hand I've been dealt. So we went full steam ahead, so to speak, and did everything on our side to make it successful. And it really was the vendor that finally said, we can't make this work. And I, in my, my point of view was like, we did our side, and I never in any way didn't give 100% as if this was the one that was, you know, formally chosen. But they finally really admitted that they couldn't provide us what we needed. So, and it was like, well, it was a success, and why continue to waste our money or invest long term in this? You know, we hadn't gotten to go live or any type of big conversion, because sometimes you go to that conversion, now you're going to live with whatever they have to offer. So I felt like we stopped it before it became, you know, a financial nightmare, you know, in production. So, you know, there was some success out of it to some extent, you know, but, and that was just how I decided to look at it, my mindset. And sometimes you just have to do that for your mental sanity too, because otherwise you'll get stressed out just focusing, back to what you said, you know, on the obstacles, on the risk, you know, that type of thing.
Right. And the one, you know, what you made me think of too is that you have to remember those times, right? Because it's easy for us, you know, a year down the road, it happens again, right? There's some other cool tool in this case, you know, comparing to what you're talking about. There's another great tool that someone feels is going to save, you know, be a great opportunity to implement in the system. And then, and they want just, hey, go ahead and implement it, that they could, you know, easily forget that, hey, remember that time we had a similar situation. Why don't we do that before purchasing it? Why don't we do X, Y, and Z first, and maybe even save us more time and money, right, before continuing down that path. So helping people remember that when you're in a situation that smells a lot like the other one did, let's take a quick time out and try to stop this even before that other one got stopped, or decide, yeah, you know what, you are right, it is the right decision, let's move forward and implement it.
Absolutely. And then we'll go to our second question here, but I also want to welcome our listeners out there. I see area code 260, and of course our local area code 404-678. Thank you for joining us. If you're on the phone and you'd like to ask a question or even weigh in, maybe your point of view, maybe your experience, you can press 1, and we will have Jovan check on you and get you in the queue to speak with us. She'll open up first just to see what you, if you're ready to speak to us. So don't think that when we open up your mic, we're just going to throw you on air. Jovan will first touch base with you. I mean, I see sometimes when she just says hello to people and welcomes them to the show, they hang up right away. So I just want to warn them,
Just
throw you out there. the first voice you'll hear is Jovan, and she's just going to make sure that you would like to go and speak with us on air, and then she'll open up your mic to us. So just wanted to let you know how the process works. If you are listening, we welcome your comments, your feedback. Also, you can email us through email at technologyexpresso@gmail.com. And then secondly, you can also tweet with us. Now, Coop's available. He's at Coop, K-U-P-E. I'm at Requirements Pro. And also there is at Tech Expresso 247. So that's at Tech Expresso 247. And Jovan is on Twitter right now and sending the questions out so that you can see the questions and answers that we're going through today. And it's all about project success and it being more than just pointing fingers at one person on the team, you know, just pointing fingers at the business analyst. It's about broadening this, because everybody mm-hmm. on the team has a stake in the project being successful. So what can we do as a team? So let me go to the next question, which is, what do you do if management doesn't support time-tested practices such as prioritization? And you know, some people say, you know, best practices, or, you know, mm-hmm. they're using the phrase of time-tested practices. But in general, and I know you have a point of view about best practices, but yeah. but there definitely probably are some things in ways that management can support overall those things that, you know, other people have, it's already been proven, don't necessarily work. So I'll let you
right.
take that. Yeah.
Just to clarify, my view on best practices is that as a whole, like best practices, when people say that, you just have to, don't just accept it for what it is. A practice was best in a particular situation, and your situation might not be exactly that. So you just have to figure out how do you implement this practice so that it fits in with your organization and other things that are going on. So don't just say, oh, well, this is a best practice, let's do it. But things like prioritization, that's almost, that's not about, there. Maybe there's different ways to do prioritization that are better than the others, but the fact you need to prioritize in some form or fashion. I actually like using the word order, putting things in order, because prioritization, typically people think there's high, medium, low, everything gets high. Well, if you order things, then something has to be first, second, third. But so what do you do? I think it goes back to your answer, Jacqueline. I don't know if I have a better one, is that you don't go and ask your manager for approval, I guess, to prioritize. It's like there's no way the team can – this is a hard one, because there's no way for a team to operate if they don't have a priority. And this might dip into another question we have, Jacqueline. I apologize for going off script a little, but I feel like the like teams that don't prioritize are set up for failure. So the other question was around the before requirements are done and in place, the team is held to a budget and a timeline, and then once scope is finalized, they have to do all of it in that budget and timeline. Well, there's no way. I mean, what we're doing is not it's not manufacturing, where there's years and years of experience of, and we're building the same exact car, or we're creating the same widget over and over and over, and there's a multitude of data to support how long it takes to do these things. It's just not that way. It's more closely related to building a house, and I think we talked about this before. It's like, would you go, and I would ask my manager, would you be okay with saying, or going to a builder of a house and saying, okay, we're not going to talk about the size of the house and all the things in it, but I need a house built in a month, and I want to pay $100,000. And then you sit down and start coming up with, well, it needs to be a, you know, 5 bedrooms, 2-car garage, a detached garage with a room up top. I need 2 floors. I also need a basement. I need the highest end, you know, appliances. You know, I don't want any cheap appliances, right? I mean, that's just, you wouldn't do that. And people understand that. And for some reason, when it comes to software, it's like, we should be able to just create this stuff. So when management says, well, we can't prioritize, we don't want to do that, it's going to happen at some point. A team can't do everything all at the same time. So the team is going to make a decision. And I think the counter to it is going back to, okay, as a team, this is how we're going to approach it. You don't have to say priority, right? But we are going to take things in this approach. We're going to do these things first, then those things, and then that. And then try to get their reaction. And at least that will open up a conversation, right, to discuss why you're doing it that way rather than another way and get their buy-in and the trade-off, right? It's about trade-off and risk and doing things that way. So I don't know if I personally, I'm not feeling like that was a wonderful answer, but that, I think, in essence, is the answer.
Exactly. And, you know, I want to tie into some of the things that you said, is that, and maybe it's not said enough, that people want IT building software, you know, problem solving using technology to be so predictable. They want it to be a science.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think people say it enough. It's not a science. Every problem has its unique aspects, every team, that every stakeholder, every group of stakeholders you have. So you're really treading on new territory. Now, to me, again, you know, we always talk about, that's one of the things that I love about it. But at the same time, if people think that, again, you can look at a problem and say, okay, because this is a contract management system, it's going to take 3 months, we're going to install it, and, you know, we're going to use it out of the box. It just doesn't always work, and most of the time, it doesn't work out that perfectly, because then when we throw in, okay, well, there's interfaces to these different systems, we capture our current mm-hmm. data this way, our process is this, and this, that, and the third, and you go on, and before you know it, it's like, in order to make this work for me, even commercial off-the-shelf products have to have, you know, those different things that have to be taken into consideration. So if you know something off the shelf, and I one time remember having to tell a stakeholder that buying software is not buying a pair of shoes. You just, you know, especially
right.
without even trying them on. You know, it's like, imagine buying, you went through, and they're shoes, aren't they? So, you know, I buy from, you know, off the shelf. And we even know, most 99% of the time, you have to try on your shoes because each one of them is different. So,
right.
you know,
yeah.
I don't think people think about software like that.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. They think it's a predictable, easy thing. And part of the challenge is, today at least, we have so much technology at our fingertips that people think this stuff just happens, right? Can't you build me an app just like this one? It's just not reality. I don't know completely how we got where we are today, but I think you're right. People think it's, oh, here's this package, or I just need a system that does XYZ. Just do it, right? But they're not thinking about all the impacts. And I think this is where good analysis kind of comes in, is to help people understand the impacts of the things that they're asking for. And all you can do is be real, right, and show the facts. And this is like being a good critical thinker, is show the facts. And it's like, this is reality, right? I don't know if you would say, hey, by saying this is reality, you're kind of maybe saying they're not living in reality, so you probably don't want to use those words. But what the situation is here are the impacts of us trying to do this. So with that other question related to we've got to do it in budget, within scope, and within time, the other factors of the quadrant, it becomes quality, right, and usability. We can get something up. Is it going to be bug-free? Probably not. Is it going to be the easiest thing to use? Probably not, right? Because we're crunched for time, and we're going to do the best we can to get things out the door in that time, within that budget, and getting everything, you know, within scope. So it's about highlighting, for you to highlight the impact. So if someone says they don't want to do prioritization, okay, here is the challenge, right? Here is what can happen. And maybe do it in terms of risk, right? Here's the risk. If we don't prioritize these things, we have to launch by a certain time, or it's requested that we launch by a certain time. If we don't prioritize the things, and we know this from years and years and years of experience of building software, that it's not a science, and we can't always hit at this point in the game, it's hard to tell 6 months down the road that we're going to be able to get all these things in within the time. So if we don't prioritize, there's a chance 6 months come, we're not going to get everything in. Or everything's not going to be into the quality you want. Or nothing gets done, right? Because we're trying to do all these little pieces. Actually, nothing is done within 6 months. And it's not a launchable product. So it's highlighting the impact of not doing something, right? And this goes back to, I do a presentation on, and we have a class on business analysis planning. So we never have enough time to do all the stuff we want or we think that it's going to take to do an excellent, a successful project. There's just not enough time. But if you're planning for your business analysis effort and saying, this is what I think needs to take, so, for example, I need 6 weeks to get all this stuff done, and the team is like, we don't have that much time. We can't take 6 weeks. Okay, then what can we pull out that is less risky to the project, right? So maybe there's a stakeholder group that we don't engage with because it's less risky, or we don't do a certain level of analysis on something and because it's less risk to the project's going to fail. But we definitely need to do these five things. Or can we add more people to the project, right? So it's all about having an intelligent conversation and showing the impacts and the risks of not doing one thing over the other.
Exactly. And you know, I think, you know, the more we talk about it, that analogy to the, whether it's building a house or the remodeling, it resonates. And I sometimes bring up in class, when I tell the students, does anybody watch HGTV? And everybody kind of brightens up. I love using that after lunch because it gets everybody's attention. But one of the things, like you said, is like you might have this big list of things that you want your perfect home to have. But the reality is you might have a date that you need to move in. And so you might move in, and there's still some additional projects that you are going to continue to do. Because we all know when you live in a house, there's always your little to-do list, you know. And you're continuously, you know, tweaking and adding. And then once you live in it a while, sometimes you discover things that, you know, you didn't know, you know, just looking at a blueprint and trying to visualize how you might live in the house, you know. And one of the things, again, you when you move in, you need to have that priority or, like you said, the order in which things need to be done. So there's certain things that have to be done before we move in. But then once you move in, then the things that come after also have to be, you know, ordered as well. And that's so much like software. You're going to have that go live or that move-in date. And then so you're making that decision up front. What needs to be done before move in or, quote, unquote, go live? And what can we do and what order do we want to do things once we move in? And, you know, I hope that some of the project managers and product managers are listening as well to this, and maybe this is resonating with them as well. Because, and something you said, too, is sometimes you take incremental steps and find allies that see things the way you do, outside of just the BA group. We can't just have this conversation among the BAs, but find an ally here and there, and then the light bulb starts going off. And then as a group, collectively, the state and the mindset start to change, and then it's kind of from a grassroots up. You know, that's another way to impact management as well. If more and more people are saying it and seeing it and supporting, you know, it can trickle up sometimes as well.
Yeah, you know, you made me think of something. Well, why is it requirements? Because when things don't get done, it becomes about a requirement, and not a big requirement usually. It's usually a small requirement, you know. So going back to the house, we missed the drawer. I expected to see a drawer here. What happened? Oh, well, you know, and the builder's like, well, it's not in the, you know, in my spec. So, you know, the BA missed the requirements. And that's where, to me, it gets that it's not just the BA's job, right? It's everybody's job to be looking at stuff and questioning and asking, well, did we think of this? You know, so everybody on the team has to be empowered to raise their hand and say, have we thought about this? What about this? Why not this? Do we need a drawer here or not? And be asking those questions as we go so that you have the time and you have the ability to make the changes necessary and not be at the end and be like, oh, well, we missed the drawer. It was bad requirements again. And so the BA, you're terrible. Let's get a new BA. You know, and then you run into the same exact problems, right? I just think it's imperative for everybody to hear that message that we say all the time, the requirements is a team sport. And everybody is involved in this. It's not just the BAs, right? I mean, they might be overall accountable to make sure or responsible to make sure things are done, but everybody has a role to play.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, and again, welcome. I see some more area codes. Thank you, 281. Thank you for joining us. 260, thank you for joining us. And for all the others, if you dial in and are in listen mode, you can press 1 if you'd like to contribute to the conversation. You know, the questions are getting a little not so black and white, because we're getting into that area of that I know is a big area of frustration for a lot of business analysts, where they feel like they're maybe backed in a corner, not necessarily getting management support. Some things are just being pushed down on them, and then they're expected to kind of perform their duties. And at the end, though, when things don't go as planned, and something you said about actually the planning process of what the analyst does, and there being a conversation. I often talk about there needs to be a conversation with the BA and the PM. I've seen it for myself where on the project plan, what the BA does is a one-liner, you know, requirements, that should take about a week or 2 weeks, whereas really just to really do justice, it at the very minimum needs to identify the licitation process and all those dependencies, because again, it shouldn't be an environment where the analyst is doing it on their own. It's you know, we talk a lot about the analyst also being the subject matter expert and talking about best practices. That would probably be on my list that tends towards
not best.
That's a no-no. That one I would call a best practice.
Yeah.
So they're reaching, you know, they're doing the elicitation, and then there's the analysis, which often is that follow-up, the dissecting, the peeling back, looking at the different levels, even cross-examination, what I also call fact-checking. That's the analysis piece, and that can be a back and forth depending on what you discover. But again, you're discovering it sooner versus later. And then the third step, which is however it needs to be documented or presented to the various different stakeholders. So all of those need to be part of the planning process, conversation, negotiation. And as a team agreed, what risk are we willing to take on? If we're going to say that we're going to, maybe try some things as we go along and then kind of revise and revisit it, kind of like that agile back and forth kind of iterative design and development, okay, then we're agreeing that, you know, we're not going to have it set in stone and we're going to have this flexibility. And with that flexibility, there are certain risks. There might be some rework. There might be some things that we discover and, that type of thing. Vice versa is these are just the different things that we're saying that as a group that we agree to take on certain risks. And that's the other piece. You know, one of the things I said that I don't think it's said enough is that when you're building software, it's not always predictable. It's not this science. The second one is that even on the BA side, we have to accept there are some risks that you have to take. There, you know, you can't do every step. We're moving out of that world of waterfall where we thought we could have these perfect requirements. Then we could have, you know, we do the build and then we deliver, and no questions asked. And we've now discovered from, you know, 30, 40 years of doing this, that, no, there's going to be some things that you discover along the way. And to build, you know, software to go into areas that you've never been in before, there are some risks. So allow the team to take some risk and allow there to be some discovery that might come on later in the project and it not be a negative thing, so to speak. So that's one of the things. Sometimes I think BAs sometimes are rigid in that when we talk about our question about management supporting them is that we know they can't give us unlimited time on the other end of the spectrum. So we've got to also realize that there are going to be some things. But if as a team we agree, okay, well, we can't do this or we're not going to go down this road completely or we're only going to go so far, then, you know, there's been times when I've had my PM sometimes or my product manager say, okay, that's enough, and I had to accept it. And if we decide as a team, then I also had their support. So I don't know if you had any comments on that.
Yeah, I think in the end, that's what it is. And, you know, to get away from the blaming of the BA, that it's the team's decision. Are we going to do this or not do this? Or how are we going to ensure that everybody has that shared understanding of what we're trying to attack and have the opportunities to ask questions, give their viewpoint, so that it is a team thing. Like, okay, we are moving forward into this next realm, phase, sprint, whatever you want to call it, all on the same page. Let's do it. So if things don't go perfect, which they don't all the time, at least the team is like, okay, so what can we do differently? I think maybe we went too fast here. We didn't have that conversation or we didn't dig deeper into the story. So next time we'll know when that pops up that we shouldn't do that. I mean, that's the attitude that you have to have. Right. Years ago, I saw a presentation. I forgot the group, but they were like ex Air Force pilots, and they talked about like after a mission, what they would do. Right. And a lot of teams do this, but I don't think they take it to heart. Is they would come in after a mission and they would leave their badges at the door, and they would. Just talk about the process, what went well, what didn't go so well, and how can we improve. And it didn't matter who it was, right? But if something went wrong, they talk about it and say, okay, next time, you know, Jacqueline, maybe if you do this and this, we'll be in better alignment. Okay, great, perfect. And just move forward. So, you know, to me, when a team has a trusting relationship, and everybody probably knows when there's trusting relationships on the team, and things go wrong, it doesn't matter, right? I mean, the finger-pointing doesn't happen. Everybody kind of bands together and is like, all right, how can we do this better? What can we do better? How can we improve? Rather than finger-pointing, well, I had it in the requirements. You just coded it wrong, or you didn't test it. Why didn't you find that in QA testing, right? I mean, that just doesn't help anything. Something didn't get found in QA testing. Why? What happened? Did we push testing, you know, did we keep pushing testing back and they didn't have enough time and we didn't prioritize the testers or give the testing team the information they needed to determine what was important to test first, second, third? You know, whatever that reason is, and talk about it and then improve the next time. I mean, that's all we could do as professionals.
Exactly. Awesome. Well, again, thank you. I want to thank our listeners for joining Coop B2T Training. The president of B2T Training and myself, Jacqueline, also known as Requirements Pro on Twitter, and Coop is KUPE, also on Twitter. And you're joining Ask the Analyst, and we're going through some of the questions. Some of them that we often get in class. And you're also welcome to email us or call in questions or even ask us live on the air. If you're on the phone or if you want to dial in, 714-888-7506, just press 1 and we'll get you queued up and you can ask your question or leave your message. If you're feeling a little bit shy, not ready to put yourself out there, you can email us at technologyexpresso@gmail.com, and that's technologyexpresso@gmail.com. And, again, thank you for joining us on your lunch hour, if this is your lunch hour for some. And do know that you can earn PDUs and CDUs for listening to today's show. And we have a whole archive. This is episode 8 of Ask the Analyst.
This is actually 9, Jackal.
Episode 9. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
8 on the brain. I'm sorry. Episode 9. We're going for a full
you
dozen
said that
here.
Earlier, and I was like, I thought we were at 9, but that's okay.
Please help me out.
Yeah.
Those numbers get jumbled sometimes. But so episode 9, and let's move on to question 3 of episode 9. So first of all, and like you said, we might have touched upon this one, but I know that this one is near and dear to many people's heart, but many projects, the schedule, the budget is determined up front, even long before the BA, and I'm kind of reading this, but I'm paraphrasing too, but long before the requirements are identified. And then, you know, then the BA is brought in, and basically those things are already locked down. But and I know this because I've heard this from my students, but they want to give you the scope and their requirements, and they keep going back to we want it all, but they're not, you know, playing fair, I'll say, and they're not revisiting the budget or the schedule. So what is a BA to do? Do they just do what they're told and you know, just wait till the end of the project and see where the chips fall, or what do you suggest?
Well, I think part of it is you want to try to raise the issue in a way to try to get people on board, but at the same time, you don't want to do I told you so kind of thing. Like, I told you it was going to fail, you see. But I don't think a BA, no matter what, so in this situation, I want to focus on the last part that you said about do they just do what they're told. I think the way to have the conversation back, and this is with a lot of things, is to put things back on you as the person that you just don't understand yet. So if someone says you need to do X, Y, and Z, you need to ask the question of, well, I don't understand yet how that's going to help us get to the end game and help us get to success. So help me understand how that's going to get us there. Or help me understand why we shouldn't do X, Y, and Z, because I feel that is going to help give me clarity and give the team clarity, and then we'll be able to point in the right direction. So the way, rather than challenging someone around, well, why should I do that, or and asking, or why did you pick that package, or why did you do this, right? That automatically puts people on the defense and get them in a mode of just do it, right? I mean, think about that 4-year-old, like why, you know, because I said so, right? I mean, that's what the parents end up going to, is because I said so. Well, so you don't want to challenge that way, but it's flipping it around to help you get on the same page. And I use this language often, right? So like, people will come, oh, we got to do this and that. And I'm like, okay, it sounds really cool, but I'm just not there yet. I just don't understand how that's going to help us, or I don't understand why that's good for our business, or I don't understand why for this project that's a good use of my time or somebody else's time. So always rolling it back to that. And then the other half of this, I think, goes back to what I was talking about earlier, is giving impacts, right? So I really do think, unless it's completely, completely, completely unreasonable, that a team can get a lot of things done in a short order, but what suffers is going to be around quality, right? Like, how pristine is it going to look, or how bug-free is it going to be? How user-friendly is it? How intuitive does the system or whatever solution you're trying to implement look? So all those things, I think, are going to be factors. And I think that's the other piece that you as a BA have to highlight, that as a leader on the team, as a you're accountable for making this happen. And if you don't bring that up, and if you don't, you know, and maybe it's a team thing, right, that the developers have to stand up too. They can't just cower back. Or what's going to happen with them is they're going to be working all night long until they pass out to try to make it happen. And that's not what, you know, I don't think that's what anybody wants. So I'll let you chime in, Jacqueline, to add, agree, disagree.
No, I'm right there with you. I know that it feels like you're, again, you know, you just want everyone to get along. But, you know, the reality is, and I've worked for some environments where they said, well, we push you on purpose. They want to get the maximum out of the team. So they kind of put these constraints on you to see what you're going to give. But there is a little bit of pressure on that, you know, because I know gone are the days, because I think some people abuse padding schedules. So
right.
Then you have the opposite end where they do kind of see what can you do within these constraints. But at the same time, I'm with you. I go back to, I think the most important thing is that in my mind, I already know we're going to run out of time before we run out of requirements. I mean, if you were building a house, you could always say, and what about this, and what about that, and, you know, I want gold plated, you know, light switches. You know, you can always come up with more, and
right.
I think that that's the same with software. You know, I want more. I want it to do more. And so, but I, as a business analyst, I'm still trying to steer. It's all about steering the team. And that's what makes us different from just being, being documentation and technical writers, is that we have to be a bit of kind of coaching the team as well as facilitating the team and somewhat being the advisor. And some of it, and I think you touched upon this too, is you've got to learn that style and that finesse working with the team, because sometimes you're steering from the back. You're not at the front and you know, everybody's just following behind you. It's vice versa. You're part of the team, and you got to keep bringing up, but have we considered this, or do you realize? And let's make sure that we do this first, because we'll get the biggest bang for our buck. And, you know, those, I'll have to say, Coop, those are two catchphrases that I think, you know, one is getting the biggest bang for your buck, you know, and then the other one is doing low-lying fruit. And I have to say, I worked for organizations.
Mm-hmm.
They were always about the low-lying fruit, but the low-lying fruit didn't always give us the biggest bang. So, you know, you got to, again, sometimes you've got to help the team kind of like, you remember that other project that we did? And we did all that low-lying fruit, and then when all was said and done, all we had was these little scattered random, you know, enhancements, and we never really got to the guts of what
was
the pain point. Yeah. So,
yeah,
you know,
I'm constantly reminding people about that. Sorry to cut you off, but you just got
no.
me. I mean, I think that in the end, you know, there's a level – and this might sound like a cop-out to everybody, but it's reality. I mean, it's being persistent of first remembering and then being able to remind people of, man, we're getting into these same patterns. Let's get away from that, right? We know what happened. We were not happy at the end of the day after the last 3 months. Let's change how we're doing it. And we're in that – we're getting back into that same pattern. You know, and I think, you know, I used this analogy on the last episode around for a different reason, but I think it applies to this about an ER doctor and, you know, a primary care physician, right? So you can look at a situation of trying to avoid, you know, if you have a healthy person or if you're trying to avoid someone's heart problems. Well, if you're in a situation where you're having a heart attack or you had a heart attack and you get brought into the ER, the ER doctor is ripping you open. They're getting your heart pumping again, getting the blockage out. They're doing whatever they can to get that done. And it's going to be, it might be ugly, right? You might have a big scar. You might survive this heart attack, but you're going to have this big scar. You're going to be in the hospital, and you're going to, you know, all these other things, and might be in a lot of pain for a while because that ER doc had to move quick, right? So the scope is the same. The budget and time might be the same, right? Or the time there is you have very limited. So you go in and do what you got to do and get the person back up. Now, primary care physician is taking a much longer approach, right? They might prescribe some medicine. They're going to be checking your blood pressure, and you're coming back every 6 months. And it's a much longer process, but it's a cleaner process. It's a healthier process. And I think – you know, that's, you know, the attitude and a message that has to be delivered to the people that are saying, we got to do it quick and we got to do it now and it's got to be perfect. Well, it's not going to be perfect. It's just not, it's not possible. And if they have a way, if they have an example of a team that did it, then let's bring that team in, right? They must be the miracle workers. And maybe that team, you know, should be responsible for this, because it's, but there is no team like that, right? I think in the end, it goes back to being persistent, having intelligent conversations, highlighting the impacts of doing what people are asking you or your team to do. If it doesn't feel right, you know, you've been there, you've done it. Some of the questions even said, keep being put on, you know, if this is always the case. Well, if it's always the case, then you have history. You know what went wrong. And your goal is to try to make it better. So what's the opportunity? Back to thinking about what's the opportunity. Maybe you talk to the people that are pushing you in this manner to say, well, let me try this. Let me do this. I know, you know, we've struggled. The last project, we fell into the same bucket. We need to change something. So let's try this little thing and see if that gets us closer, if that moves the needle.
And, you know, and it's so funny. And actually, after I make this next comment, I want to go to our phones to say hi to an old friend that has been a avid listener of technology and supporter of Technology Express. So I will go to the phones next. But the one last comment I wanted to add to this area that we're talking about, you know, as I'm sitting here with my laptop, I had it propped up with my essential skills book from our essential skills class. And I flipped it open real quick, and I was like, you know, when we do the part where we do the shark tank and those different challenges, we had we call intelligence disobedience, intelligent disobedience.
Yeah,
and so
yeah.
I thought I wanted to drop that in because we actually even, you know, have an exercise and discussion around that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So and that just, you know, just ties into that, you know, stand true to your convictions. If something just doesn't feel right, it's okay for you to stand on that point of view, but there's a way to make sure that you have the supporting, you know, evidence, the facts, even a good alternative. You know, you don't always go with a problem, and just, you know, talking the team through and steering them in a different direction. So I think across the board is, now, something I always say, because, you know, the question in here was, does the BA just do whatever they're told to do? And, you know, the fact of the matter, and I think this is a part of, you've got to pick your battles. So not everyone, you know, you've got to stand firm that, you know, we can't or you won't or you refuse, you know, that type of thing. You pick your battles, but there are some. And then, you know, talking with the rest of the team and building alliances to see if others feel the same way, that, you know, we're repeating the same mistake over and over, and this is something that we could do something about. And then standing and building the right case and coming up with solutions and alternatives of why different things need to happen in order to have different outcomes. And and then take it to management, you know, respectfully and you know, making sure that you're well prepared to make your case. And I think that, you know, you got to look at those opportunities too. But again, caveat, pick your battles. I want everybody to say, you know, happily employed.
right,
but that's
exactly.
It.
Yeah, the goal.
So let me jump to, because, you know, we always like hearing some different voices. So I'm opening the mic for Sharon Simmons. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Hello.
I'm here.
Tell our audience, where are you calling from, Sharon?
Oh, I'm calling from Houston, Texas.
Oh, wonderful. I know you're always traveling all around the world, so I don't know where in the world is Sharon Simmons. So.
Yeah, we always tease about me being like Waldo.
Yeah. Well, thank you for listening to today's show.
Absolutely. I saw the alert or the notification. I was like, oh, I got to get in today. Because I've been in the States for about 2 days now, so I'm just trying to get back acclimated to this side of the country.
I gotcha. Well, I know you maybe have heard some of our tips and challenges as people are, you know, those either work in the industry, developing software, but yourself, you're more of an entrepreneur that kind of found yourself in this arena of software development and design. So maybe some of the pain points that we're talking about, maybe now from your experience, you've experienced some of those things. But I'm sure it's definitely been a learning experience for you.
Well, it definitely has been a learning experience. I'm listening to the show and listening to you guys talk about business analysts, and I wear so many hats, and sometimes I may find myself a business analyst. I not only am I working with the team that I'm on now, my new team, but also I am creating other apps, and I'm working with students and startups, companies in St. Kitts. So, you know, having think tanks and listening to your show today, I could see myself in those places where I'm talking to other entrepreneurs and we're brainstorming about different types of solutions. And having that communication, I think communication is the biggest thing. We all are different type of thinkers. Like, I'm very creative, and I remember on your show maybe 4 or 5 months ago, you mentioned something about being an introvert thinker or being a creative person, but more introverted than extroverted. And I'm one of those kind of thinkers. So I have to, when I'm in a group and we're designing or we're having a think tank or we're hacking out something, communication is the biggest link between all of us because we all think differently. So being persistent, you know, and listening to some of the tips that you guys are mentioning, I'm making notes and I'm absorbing these tips because I find myself in those areas.
Absolutely. Well, I'm so excited. It's so good to hear your voice, and thank you as always for listening, you know, to the show. And we definitely have to catch up. And you know, you're always welcome to. A lot of you may remember Sharon Simmons. She did a series for us, and it's in our archives. She created an app. She wasn't a technical person, but she created an app. She even documented how she went about creating an app as a non-techie and wrote a book about it as well. So if you're interested, please definitely check out our archives. Sharon Simmons is in there. And, you know, the other thing, and Coop, that I think that is interesting, and I've had more than one person say this, is that the things that we're talking about, other people can relate to them because – you know, it comes down to problem solving and whether even the solution is technology or just solutioning in general. As a business analyst, some of this, the communications, the constraints, the prioritization, this resonates with people. And so someone like Sharon, who's just created an app or created a couple of apps now, you know, working with the students, it's still applies to their efforts as well. So I think that's really cool that it's not just people who are doing IT professionally or doing business analysis
right.
Professionally. This is, and we said this at the beginning, this is about success and having project success.
And I'm glad, Sharon, you even pointed out, like, you use the words, like, I'm a business analyst too, right? And I think, that supports my belief, and it keeps popping up of these examples like you, where everybody needs this business analysis mindset regardless. It's not,
right.
To your point, Jacqueline, it's not, oh, you do business analysis if you have the title BA and you work on IT projects. No, that's not what this is about. I met someone for coffee this morning that does business analysis all the time, and they're really a program director at a large university. So, but they're, they could easily have the title business analyst. I mean, because the stuff she does is all business analysis type tasks, not IT. I mean, some of the things she has to do relates to IT, but not all, and not even a majority of what she does.
Absolutely. Well, again, I'm thank you, Sharon, for joining us today, and I'll definitely be circling back with you. And to Sharon and to others like Sharon, visit B2T Training's website. There are, I do some blogs, Coop does some blogs there as well, and there's different templates. So again, you don't have to have the title. This is about problem solving. It's about coming up with solutions, and I think that it'll really surprise people that this conversation and this arena isn't just a job title. This is really just and you even mentioned it, Sharon. We talk a lot about different types of thinking and thinking tools and communication. Coop and I, we did at the IIBA a whole about six different types of thinking. All of this is in that same space of the problem solving and whatever it takes for successful projects.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for letting me kind of hop on and hop off. Coop, it was good hearing your voice. And Jacqueline, I would like to catch up with you soon.
Absolutely. Thank you again. Thank you again. So that was Sharon Simmons. Thank you, out of Houston. So let me see if we can, I don't know if Coop, if you want to kind of wrap up, or if you want to look at one of the final questions here. We've got about 10 minutes. We usually can squeeze a lot in 10 minutes, but,
Go for it.
So our question 4, what if the only thing your team agrees on is that everything wrong with the project is the BA's fault?
Yeah. Well, looking at the positive, at least you got them to agree on something, right?
right.
So that could be that's the first step, right? You need to get around that. So I it comes down to, we talked about this at length before, and that requirements are a team sport. So the first thing is, and this is lessons or feedback I give on accepting feedback, right? So I think you have to take this in, right? So don't take it I don't want to tell you what to do, but try not to take it personally and flip this around and try to get advice and understanding of what could you have done differently. If everybody is like, the spotlight's on you, the BA, okay, take one for the team, admit, yep, I can improve. What is it? How can I get better? And then open the conversation. Don't push back and be defensive. So when I give my talks around accepting feedback and how do you improve, and it's about this feedback loop, the first is you got to ask for feedback. People don't necessarily give you the feedback, the critical feedback you need. In this case, people are giving the feedback, right? They're pointing the finger at you saying you're the problem. So now you have the conversation. After getting the feedback and understanding of what they feel could have went better, and what could have happened better, and what you personally as the BA could have done better, you just say thank you, right, and accept that. Don't get defensive, right, because if you get defensive, then it becomes a battle, right? If you're like, well, I did that because you did this, and then they're like, oh, well, if you didn't do that, I wouldn't have done that, and this back and forth, and nothing gets accomplished, right? So you can't do that. So you have to be, you have to rise above it and say, okay, thank you for that feedback, and then go back and think about what you can do differently and what is possible for you to do differently, and then go back to the team and say, okay, I heard you. Here's what I can do. In the constraints of your team or whatever it is, here's what I think I can improve on, and here's how I'm going to get better. What I need help on is X, Y, and Z. Is anybody willing to step in, blah, 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 and help me with that? At least you'll then have the conversation. By getting defensive, it's just going to cause problems, right? By going to your manager and saying, I'm doing a good job, it's them, can you help step in? You know, bringing the managers and directors and people above the team into the conversation is just going to make it worse. People are going to start to take sides. And those managers and those directors, those people that you escalate to, really don't have a lot of information about what's going on day to day. I mean, in reality, unless they're part of the team, right, they don't have the day to day stuff. So the decision, what they're making decisions on is all what they're hearing from different people. And it's really hard for them to make good decisions. And it might benefit you personally, but it's become a better open team. And if you, so if this is the behavior you have when somebody, and maybe you're in a situation where everybody agrees that it's the BA, but if you take this high road, quote unquote, and say, okay, I'll take it. It is all me. What should I do? Give me ideas, give me advice, give me some things that I can think about so that I can improve. Then hopefully that attitude goes to the next person, right? When it's something that they can improve on, they'll have the same attitude. And then you'll start, as a team, start having these conversations where it's not adversarial. It's for the improvement of the individuals and the team as a whole.
I like that. I like that a lot. And you know, just one small thing that I would add is that you're absolutely right. Ask the team for feedback. Be open for that feedback. Look how you can continuously kind of process improve. And the other piece is, and I tell groups is you know, that the one thing that I love to take from Agile is that they have whatever your iteration is, that 2 to maybe 4 week checkpoint where you're kind of doing your retrospect. Well, even if you're not on an Agile team, just do your own professional, you know, for your own professional
right.
development, retrospect with your team. So how's it going? Because what I don't like about this question, don't wait to the end and then everybody, you felt like everybody is now pointing at you. If there was, find out when this tide came about along the way, like, are we not on the same page? Are we not in agreement? You know, and not saying in that way, but what is it working for us? Is it not working for us? What do you like about how it's working? What could be changed? What could we improve? So you're having this conversation along the way, and so that you don't get blindsided. You shouldn't be blindsided that people are starting to think we're not getting enough information or we didn't go deep enough. You know, so you can course correct early and often, you know, as Agile says, fail fast. So be looking for that, you know, and soliciting or eliciting that feedback early and often.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's the key. And everybody has that sense, at least I think so. Some people catch on quicker than others. Sometimes I don't catch on as quick as some other people, but you have that sense like, oh, something's probably not right. People are not happy about something. Yeah, so ask the question, right? Be proactive about it. Like, is everything okay? Do we, what's going on? What can we do to improve? I know, Jacqueline, I don't know if you do this in classes, but some of our other instructors, even every day, they kick off every day of the class. Okay, what went well? What didn't go so well? What can we improve on, tomorrow? So, like, you can do that too, right? I mean, you don't have to
exactly.
do it every day, but every week, every 2 weeks. Like, so you just get that to be a pattern. And it's not about – you can start it with, how can I improve? But then hopefully it'll build to, wait, let's talk more than just you, Jacqueline. Let's talk about all of us.
Right.
And then it becomes less about finger pointing than how do we consistently get better.
Exactly. Nope, absolutely, absolutely. And we are getting close on our time. And maybe we can, you know, carry over, which we often do, our questions for the next episode. But I also want to say to our audience, are there some questions that you have? Maybe the questions today inspired you, and now, you know, you want to jump in and be a part of the conversation. We absolutely would welcome your input and what's your frustration? What are you experiencing on your project? Maybe it's something totally different. You know, one of our last questions, and again, like I said, we can carry this over to the next episode, is having that input, the BA having that input on which approach that the team should be using. Some projects that feel like Agile, they could definitely benefit from Agile, which you guys have heard us talk about. Other projects could maybe benefit more from a waterfall. But again, that kind of being predetermined and imposed on the BA, and that being yet another source of frustration. So that one, how about we put that one on ice until our next episode? Want to take the time to thank you, Coop, for being with us today. Thank you to all of our listeners. Thank you, Jovan. Had a great time seeing those tweets come out and heard quoting some of our sound bites. And just want to invite everyone to visit our archives and listen to the previous 8 episodes, if you haven't, to catch up, and also to catch some of those PDUs and CDUs, and visit B2T Training's website, the sponsor of today's show. So thank you, Coop.
Thank you. It's been great, as always.
Absolutely, absolutely. So if everyone would just stay tuned for a few announcements and words from our sponsor, and we look forward to talking to you in 2 weeks. Stay tuned for a word from our sponsor.
This episode is sponsored by and features B2T Training. B2T Training has trained and equipped almost 15,000 of the most successful and high-performing practitioners of business analysis since the year 2000. Our courses are developed and taught by the most respected and highest qualified experts in the industry. Did you know that Coop is the president of B2T Training? If you like what you heard today, join us for one of our upcoming public classes to learn the business analysis tips, techniques, and best practices that he's talking about. We have several classes coming soon to Atlanta. Our Essential Skills for Business Analysis class will be offered May 16th to the 19th in Atlanta, which will be taught by Jacqueline, by the way, as well as July 25th through the 28th in Chicago. Essential Skills is our most popular and highest rated course. It's appropriate for beginners or experienced analysts needing to refresh or hone their skills. We also have a session of our Agile Value Management course scheduled for June 7th through June 9th. Jacqueline will also be teaching this class here in Atlanta. Don't miss her as she walks through how to use Agile to build the right thing with a customer-focused approach. After each of our classes, we also include ongoing enrichment and reflective activities that provide students the boost they need to sustain their learning and competency. In other words, we make it stick. Get your business analysis training from the most respected and highest qualified source of experts in the industry. Find out more about these public class offerings and others, or call to speak with one of our training solution sales associates toll-free at 866-675-2125. Follow us on social media and visit bdttraining.com to see our full course outlines, blog, and free downloadable resources. We get it. We'll help you get it too.
You have been listening to Technology Espresso Cafe Radio. For a full list of our podcasts, social media handles, and upcoming shows, visit our web portal at www.technologyespresso.com. Join our text club and get monthly alerts of upcoming events and initiatives. Text the phrase "Full Steam Ahead" to 41411. Financial support and donations of any denominations are welcome.
Your contributions help us sustain and reach underserved communities who benefit from the many programs, role models, and technologists that we showcase. Thanks to our sponsors, partners, and thank you, our listeners. And remember, we encourage you to listen, learn, leverage, launch.